Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Brait Capital Markets Day. All participants will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during this event. Participants on the webcast may submit their questions in the text box at the bottom of the screen. If you should need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Peter Hayward-Butt. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much, and thanks very much to all the investors and stakeholders who've joined us today. Thanks for your interest. Over the last number of years, we've obviously spent a huge amount of time focusing on, the changes in the various portfolio companies, what's been happening in many of our portfolio companies. But I think we spent a huge amount of time focusing, obviously, on the Virgin Active business, which has been a subject of much of our efforts over the last 18 months or so. What we thought, and, based on what we've been asked to do by shareholders, is to do a deeper dive actually into the Premier business today. So in terms of the presentation today, I've actually been joined by Kobus Gertenbach, who is the current CEO of Premier. I think the one thing, whilst we do have a different diverse set of shareholders, I think all of them are tired of hearing from me. So we've brought in Kobus and Fritz Krobeler. Fritz is the CFO of the business, who recently joined. And they'll be able to take you through in much more detail the Premier slides. So the purpose of today is firstly to give an overview of the Brait strategy, where we are, what have we achieved over the last 18 months since Ethos took over. I'll then spend a bit of time, 10-15 minutes, on touching on Virgin Active, the update on that portfolio company, both in terms of the international business in South Africa, a very quick look at how New Look is performing, and then we'll spend the majority of the presentation on a deep dive into the Premier business. And Kobus and Fritz will take you through that. So Kobus, for those of you who don't know, Kobus joined Premier about 10 years ago, actually from Brait. He was a member of Brait before. He's been the CFO of Premier for 10 years. He, in the last 3 or 4 months, has taken over as the CEO of the business from Tjaart Kruger. So he's deeply steeped in the knowledge of Premier, understands the business obviously a lot better than I do. And I think when you get to know Kobus, you'll see he has an encyclopedic knowledge of the business, and I think some of that will come out today. And he's joined by Fritz Krobeler, who recently joined from RCL as the CFO. Fritz was previously the CFO of Country Birds, has listed company experience through that, and has joined together with Kobus as part of the executive to take Premier forward. So without further ado, let me start off by getting into the overview of where we are. And this just talks to, the last 18 months. As you'll remember, Ethos took over, I think, in March, the 1st of March, 2021. It certainly has been a baptism of fire. But I think if you look on the left-hand side of this slide, what we set out at the time of the change in March was three core areas that we would focus on. This was the core asset base itself. And in that, it was about resetting the strategies to be exit-ready over a 3 to 5 year period. There were operational improvements which we believed we could drive in the business to drive returns for shareholders. And the last one is around management alignment. Obviously, the change of strategy necessitated us ensuring we had alignment with the management teams of the underlying portfolio companies. The second was around the Brait balance sheet, obviously to sell non-core assets to reduce debt in the business. And obviously, you'll remember we've sold Iceland and DGB to achieve some of that, to restructure the BML facilities and create some strategic flexibility. And largely, those two have been done to a large extent, and we're left with some of the core assets that we'll focus on today. And the last part of the triumph that there was the operational issues, and that really was around reducing the operational cost base within Brait, restructuring the board, and re-domiciling the Maltese entity back to Mauritius. So on the right-hand side, I think we can talk for 2 seconds on what has been delivered. The disposal of Iceland Foods, which was disposed of for $2.3 billion, it happened to be an 83% premium to the share price, sorry, to the NAV of Iceland Food in our books at the time. We sold DGB about this time last year, or slightly earlier this time last year, for NAV of $470 million. And that $4.4 billion, there was $4.4 billion reduction in the group debt, from the business, largely driven by those disposals. The premier performance in terms of the core assets really has been stellar, and we'll let Kobus and Fritz talk to that today. The LTM EBITDA is up 14% as at March. That performance has continued very strongly over the last quarter. And we've recently concluded a Mr. Sweet transaction to beef up the confectionery business. And again, Kobus will talk to that. So if you look at the NAV since March last year, the NAV is probably up over 30% year on year. And I think that talks to two things. One, obviously the EBITDA growth in the business, but also the cash generation in that business. So it's, again, it's been very pleasing to see the performance of Premier. In terms of Virgin Active, as the shareholders will know, we concluded the restructuring plan and the CVA for New Look over the last 12 months. I think in both instances, we've recalibrated the operating costs in those businesses and set them up for success. And again, I'll touch on in about 5 minutes' time, you know, some of the updates on Virgin Active, which is very pleasing to see some of the benefits of those restructurings coming through. The new break board was put in place at the back end of April, and we've reduced the operating costs within break by over $500 million per year. There's been a very strong recovery in the console performance, which has been very pleasing, and New Look's strategy and turnaround really has started to take hold. And again, I'll touch on a couple of pointers on that later. But I think all of that has been somewhat overshadowed, certainly if you look at the share price, in my view, by what's, you know, the implications of COVID that has had on Virgin Active. We all know the operational leverage in Virgin Active has been very significant. And from a business that obviously when we got in as Ethos 18 months ago was an asset that we were looking to get shareholder distributions from, you know, it's required shareholder contributions over the last 12 months to ensure that it survived the COVID epidemic. So those last, you know, those injections have obviously required us to draw down recently on the BML facilities. And again, it remains a key focus of the board to ensure that we resolve the capital structure at a break level. Just moving quickly onto Virgin Active, and again, I don't want to dwell on this asset or New Look, to be honest, because this is really around Premier today. But to give you some insights, as I mentioned, the restructuring of the Virgin Active Europe business is now complete. The cumulative cash benefit of that restructuring was £134 million, of which 45 was contributed by shareholders, so a very significant contribution from landlords, from the licensor, and other stakeholders in the business. And I really do think that set the business up for, you know, a strong recovery. And we're seeing that in the UK. If you look at the second bullet point there, you know, much stronger than expected performance in the UK since reopening. I think we spend a huge amount of time with investors talking about, you know, is there still a path for growth in gym businesses globally? I think not just Virgin Active, but if you look at our competitors, particularly in the UK, how quickly they've bounced back, I think it's proved beyond doubt that, if anything, there's been an increase in interest in healthcare generally and gyms as a part of that in wellness. So in the UK, we've seen 6% growth in total members since May. And I use May, that's just because of the time we produced our results and spoke to these numbers last time, and a 20% increase in active members since May. So that's a very significant upside on what we thought would happen, which is very pleasing. The South African business has shown very strong resilience through COVID. I think we all recognize that, you know, having restrictions on the business where you can only have 50 people in the gym has impacted really around sales. To be honest, you can't really have big sales campaigns when you've got people outside the gym. You know, and we can see it in the numbers. Literally, as we move down a level from COVID restrictions to level two, you know, how quickly the sales have come back. And again, I'll touch a bit on that on a couple of slides time. The Italian business, you know, reopened at the back end of May, slightly later than we had hoped, but it has opened. It is still subject to a couple of restrictions around showers and saunas, and you need to have vaccinations to be able to go to the gym. But certainly over the last 2 to 3 weeks, we always said September was a key month when the Italians come back from their annual holiday. You know, we really have seen some robust membership engagement around the Italian business. As I mentioned before, the global theme of increased focus on health and wellness, I actually think is much, much more prevalent than it ever was pre-COVID. And again, if you talk to one of the risks that we all faced going into COVID was, you know, what would COVID do for gym operators globally? Not just ourselves, but I think we're seeing more than we've ever seen before an interest in gyms and health and wellness. So I think that issue has been taken off the table. Now it's really about the business driving as quickly as we can to get back to 2019 levels. The operational leverage that, you know, in the business worked against us during COVID, but you can also see very significant value accretion, you know, once the operational leverage turns the other way. So just moving quickly to, you know, how some of the territories are performing. Italy, as I mentioned, opened up the back end of May. There are still some restrictions in place around swimming pools, showers, saunas, et cetera, and the fact that you need to be vaccinated to be in the gyms. Trading has been in line with our expectations that we put together, you know, at the time of the restructuring. As we always know, the European summer is a seasonal low for the business. And then the last 2 to 3 weeks, we really have seen an uptick in sales in that business, which has been very pleasing to see. We've also managed to achieve very significant rental savings with most of the landlords, and many of those are actually permanent savings in nature. So, again, talking to operational leverage in the Italian business, you know, if we can get back to our 2019 levels, we will show higher EBITDA than we did going into COVID. Australia is a different story, to be honest. The lockdown restrictions look like they're going to be extended to mid-October. The Aussies, I think, are all over the place, quite frankly, with their strategy for COVID. The indications we have is that we will be allowed to open our Sydney gyms in the middle of October, which is what we're planning for. But pre the lockdown, actually the membership engagement was very strong in Australia, particularly in the suburban gyms. So less so, obviously, in the inner city gyms with the work from home culture. But certainly in most of our gyms in the suburban things had actually seen very good membership engagement. If you talk to Thailand and Singapore, again, relatively small in the overall contribution. Singapore is open, and actually we're seeing very good in membership engagement levels. I think activity levels are 155% of what they were in 2019. So I think to the point of our people coming back to gyms, absolutely. Thailand remains closed, and we expect it to reopen sometime, probably in my view, towards the back end of October, given that cases are starting to come down in Bangkok. The UK opened in April, as you will remember, but only really from the beginning of or middle of May, when we had group exercise classes open. We've seen very strong trading performance since then. A lot of people have come off freeze. Sales are significantly higher. I'll talk to it in the next slide. Very importantly, given that the inner city gyms are the ones that are probably most impacted, management done a very, very good job of closing three of our London city gyms, moving those members across to other gyms within the city. And so then we've actually reduced our gyms in the city from 9 to 6. So I think that's had a really positive impact on performance, and again, I'll touch on that over the page. On the SA gyms, as I mentioned, clubs have been operating with a 50-person limit up until a couple of weeks ago, and there's literally a direct correlation. As soon as you open up, you know, you see the sales tab open, and I'll talk to you over the page the recent sales recovery that we've seen, very much akin to 2019 levels, which, as I've mentioned to you before, actually was a pretty good year from a sales perspective in the context of Virgin Active South Africa. So just touching on some of the membership slides, and again, I won't focus too much on the left-hand side, but more on the commentary on the right in terms of latest performance, which I think anecdotally gives you some indication of where the business is. As I mentioned, Italy is in a seasonal low. It always, every year, you see members go on freeze during the summer months. They come back in September. So if you look at the latest numbers there, you know, whereas when we spoke to you in May, we had around about 12,000 of our members were on freeze. That increased over, you know, over the period to the end of August. But probably very importantly, if you look at the sales since we opened up, it was around about 50% of 2019 levels between May and August. If you look at September sales, and admittedly we're only 3 weeks in, but it's back to 90% of 2019 levels. And usage levels already back up to 79%. So usage levels are merely for every single member, how many times did that person use the gym this year versus 2019? And that is at 79%. So people are using it roughly 80% of the time that they used going into COVID. I won't dwell much on the Asia Pacific business, which, as I mentioned, remains closed. It's small in our lives, but obviously we'd far prefer it to be open. But I do think that second bullet point at the bottom there around the Singapore clubs, which only reopened on the 11th of August, usage levels are at 155%. So on a relatively similar membership base, people are using it 150% as opposed to 100% that they used in 2019. The UK has been very pleasing since we opened up. I think it's important to remember that 35% of our UK clubs are what we call corporate clubs. That means over 50% of the members are business-based. So it could be in a business park. It doesn't mean there's no non-business members, but it's predominantly, you know, corporate members. But despite that, if you look at the usage levels, it's back up to 99%. So effectively exactly the same levels of usage as we had going into COVID. And I think if you look at the provincial clubs at 105 and the residential clubs at 102, actually the corporate clubs, the 35% I referred to, is actually what drags it down, which is not unexpected. People are still not traveling at the same levels into inner city London. I think if you look at the TFL stats last week, it was up to 70% of pre-COVID levels. So that's very pleasing. It was 35% over the last couple of months. So I think we will see this turn in time. But I think if you look at the sales, which I think gives you probably the biggest indication or the best indication of how the business is performing, if you look at our 2021 sales since we reopened to 2019, the provincial clubs, so those are outside of London, are up 151%. So 51% more sales than we had in 2019. London residential up 124, and even the London corporate gyms are up or pretty much at the same level as they were in 2019. So I think that's a very positive sign for the business in the UK, and we look forward to that business getting quickly back to break even, hopefully by the beginning of next year. If you look at the SA business, the sales performance has remained pretty strong despite the level three restrictions, to be honest. Sales rates during this year have been 87% of 2019, which, given the impact that we've had on level three, I think is a great result. And actually, as I mentioned, we've seen an uptick on that in September to at or slightly above the 2019 level. So again, you know, on all fronts, we're starting to see members come back. You know, we're probably more bullish than we were, you know, a couple of months ago that, you know, in terms of how quickly members will come back, you know, and that's been pretty pleasing to see. Just quickly moving onto the New Look business. Again, you know, this is a business that we touch on, you know, in our investor results. So I'll give you a quick update. The results came out from the New Look business post our results. So if you look at the year ending 27th of March, you know, we completed the CBA process and the recapitalization of that business, which I really think gives the business the financial and operational flexibility to deliver on its strategy. The business has achieved a number one position again in overall women's wear market share, which is key for it. And I think importantly, you know, cash and liquidity available, it was 114 million as at March, so 89 million of that, which was affected in cash. So if you take the performance since then, we've seen market share continue to grow. We've increased value share, you know, of the market over the last four periods in a row, which is again, you know, credit to the management team of having the right stock, you know, in the right stores. A very strong performance year to date. So we're tracking on budget, both in terms of the retail or the bricks and mortar business, but also the e-commerce business, you know, which has performed very strongly during lockdown. And I think if you look at the improvement in the conversion and the markdown activity, it underlines what management's been talking about for some time. It's about getting the right product, you know, into the right stores, and they've done a great job on that. There's been a significant payment over the last 2 to 3 months of any of the deferred costs we had over COVID, so there was a significant number that remained deferred as at the end of March. Most of those have now been repaid in full. And I think we're starting to see the strategic investment that we've made in digital data logistics, and I would actually add to that management. You know, we brought in a lot of new people, including the new chairman, Mike Coop, who is the ex-Sainsbury's CEO, who joined us a couple of weeks ago. I think it's a great coup for the business that someone of Mike's stature, who was a previous CEO of, you know, one of the biggest retailers in the UK, you know, has joined the business. So the business now really is talking to strategic growth. You know, I think we've seen a massive change in the landscape, you know, on the high street there, but we're very confident that this business will continue to grow, albeit off a pretty low, you know, base coming out of COVID. So that deals with what I was going to speak to today. I'm now going to hand over to Kubis to talk through in a bit more detail the Premier slides.
Thank you, Pete. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to give you guys a little bit more color around Premier. I know that Brait has included Premier for many years now as part of its results. I'm hope that you find the little bit more deep dive into the capabilities and the detail around Premier interesting. We're going to start off with a slide that really just lays out the structure of the presentation for us today and try to give an overview of why we believe Premier is very well positioned to lead the market in the specific categories that we're playing in and some other opportunities. First and foremost, we believe that there's very attractive industry fundamentals, really driven by two elements. The first one being that Premier is a very large-scaled player in the market, and one might ask yourself, okay, so what, why is that important for an investor? And if you look at it, so we've got a very strategic asset base, which I will go through in a little bit more detail in subsequent slides, a national distribution footprint, and very long-standing customer relationships. If you look at the milling business within Premier, it really does give a significant amount of scale and provides a platform on which one can then build on many other categories and add on other products, especially from a distribution, sales and merchandising perspective. And then we've got very long-standing leading brands in all the categories that we are involved in. And I'll give you some more flavor down the line. We also believe that the defensive nature of the staple foods category that we are heavily exposed to is really, at this point in time, quite a compelling investment case. Essential spending accounts for almost 60% of total household spending in Southern Africa, of which bread is by far the largest dry grocery food. So it's really a significant size category that Premier is a major player in. And we've also got quite a lot of exposure to your higher growth, lower and middle LSM segments within the market. And we see continued opportunity for Premier in that space. If we combine the attractive industry fundamentals with operational excellence, first and foremost around the investments that we've made over the last decade, consistent, sustained investment within the business. We spent 4.5 billion rand in CapEx under Brait's ownership since 2011, really creating world-class manufacturing and distribution footprint. And the freshness and the newness of the capital base that provides really puts us in a position to have significant efficiencies out of the latest technology that affords to the business. If one look then add to that a highly experienced management team, I've had the privilege to take over from Chart on the 1st of April this year. After having worked with him very closely over the last decade to get the business into the position where it is today. And if you look at the rest of our executive team, which we will get to subsequently, almost all of them, other than Fritz, which has recently joined us, have been with us for many years. We're an established team, and we really do work well together. We've cultivated a culture based around an agile mindset, and one might say, well, what is agile, and what really drives that? And I think that in subsequent slides, I'll explain how important the leadership capability, not just at the top level, but at all levels within the organization, really what an important part that plays in creating a environment within which people can make agile decisions and stay on course around the purpose and direction of the business. Environmental, social, and regulatory, as we term it, a significantly important part of our business, and we will highlight exactly how that actually fits in with the strategy of our organization, especially going forward. And so we believe we're well placed for future growth, especially on the basis of an excellent financial track record, revenue growth of 9% over the last decade, with operational EBITDA growth of 18%, as we've managed to continue to improve the margins in the business, which we will also take you through. The business is has got a high level of operational leverage, and so to the extent that one is able to add more revenue, more marginal contribution of different products and segments to the operational leverage of the business, there is a disproportionate increase in the profitability growth of Premier. And then we've also understood that shareholders want some cash flow back. The business has managed to generate that cash flow, and we've returned 1.7 billion rand to Brait in the last decade, and we certainly feel that the business is set up to continue to do that. If I can then move a little bit into just the status quo of our infrastructure and our operations for a moment. Premier employs over 8,000 people on a permanent basis. These are Premier employees and not employed through any labor brokers. If we add our dedicated service providers, especially our security contingent, as well as our cleaning service provider that's dedicated to our operations, that effectively climbs to over 12,000 people directly involved in Premier's operations every day. We've got a significant wheat and maize mill footprint across South Africa, in Eswatini and Mozambique. And in the Mozambique space specifically, we're very much concentrated in the south, around Matola, around Maputo. That is our stronghold within the Mozambican market from a regional perspective. Size of the operations is quite significant, 1.1 million tons of wheat milling capacity and 690,000 tons of maize milling capacity. And I think that one sometimes gloss over these numbers quite quickly, but if you really think about it, that a double link only carries 33 tons of wheat or maize, you start to get a feel for how many vehicles at least are involved in bringing in the raw materials and distributing the finished product out. Very importantly for us, it's something we've worked on hard over the last 10 years, is to make sure that we own all our manufacturing sites. It's a very difficult relationship with a landlord when you have manufacturing on a site and someone else owns the property and really has you in a situation where you don't have a choice to move. The operating platform that we have, we've leveraged into new FMCG categories, and we will go through that in a subsequent slide in more detail. Especially on the bakery side, our installed capacity is over 720 million loaves of bread per year. And our business is running at close to the around the 90% capacity level on those facilities. And at the same time, given the investments that we've made and the opportunities that we have, we don't foresee that we in the near-term future need to add any other greenfield bakery to continue to meet market demand. Our 20 distribution depots, our deliveries to massive 34,000 customers on a daily basis, especially on the bread side, it's a significant size operation and requires incredible coordination to get that done on a daily basis. Our baking of about 1.8 million loaves, distributed via 930 bakery trucks. The thing about a bakery business is that there's no such thing as stock left over from the previous day. You have to bake that every day, and you have to load that fresh product into your vehicles every single day, and you have to be locked and loaded out 5 o'clock every morning to go out and race into the market to compete with your other competitors. And then the significant exposure to the informal market, the lower income levels, which I've alluded to, with over 60% of our Molbake division's sales coming out of the informal trade. If one just looks a little bit towards the footprint, one or two highlights, Kroonstad, largest maize mill in the world for human consumption, milling 72 tons an hour. Our Cape Town bakery, 22,000 loaves an hour. Our Durban and Pinetown bakeries, 24,000 loaves an hour. Significant scale operations with massive size plant and equipment installed. Vereniging, our largest wheat mill, 36 ton an hour mill, also giving us good economies of scale. And I think then the contrast with that is that in the inland region, our largest bakery is really a 6,000 loaf an hour plant, and you can see that we don't really quite have the scale in the inland region that we have managed to establish in all our coastal areas. four of our bakeries and wheat mills are integrated on the same site. That, in our view, is a significant structural advantage that we have in this business. And the levels of efficiency from an overhead perspective, but also coordination on product quality and many other benefits that that arise from that close collaboration on site really does give us a strong ability to provide quality and efficiencies within the market. We've got our pads and tampon lines for manufacturing for our Lelets brand here in South Africa in one facility in Durban, quite close to the port, that also gives us quite good efficiencies. And we've got exclusive right pretty much of the use of the Richards Bay terminal to bring in wheat from offshore, which is also something we've put into place in the last couple of years and gives us very good efficiencies in terms of our supply chain. And then in Mozambique, I think it's very important to understand that our SIM facility sits right on the harbor and that we actually have a conveyor belt that offloads the wheat from ships on directly into the mill and the silo complex. From a brand perspective, we have a very strong regional brands in our portfolio versus some of our competitors that are more nationally based. I think that from a market perspective, the market has moved to a very localized environment where national advertising and promotional activity really plays less and less and less of a role, and marketing becomes a much more regionalized endeavor in the categories that we play in. And so we feel that with our ability to position some of our brands specifically for the nuances and cultural differences within our country to speak to specific consumers in different regions does give us a advantage vis-a-vis some of the national brands that we compete with in order to tailor our products to specific customers. If we then move to look at the overall investment that we have made over the last decade to really get us to the position that I have taken you through on the previous slide, you will see that, you know, when we started out in 2011, Brait was a long-term investment holding company, and they certainly implemented that strategy from a premier perspective. They gave us the opportunity to make investments and to make long-term changes in the organization that really were to drive growth over a very long extended period of time. If you think of that from an acquisition perspective, you know, we there's really three ways of making money out of an acquisition. You either buy cheap, you grow it significantly, or you take out a lot of costs and efficiencies. And I think in the economic environment that we've experienced over the last number of years, the focus of Premier being able to really drive value from the cost reduction and efficiencies of the platform that we have has really given us an ability to drive value from the acquisitions. So our acquisitions are fully integrated, one distribution platform, same group services, one ERP system, and so really adds to the continued increase in economies of scale as we add more categories and more products onto our platform. From a CapEx perspective, I've talked about the 4.5 billion. And it really does put us in a position where our assets are fresh. I think we certainly can claim that we've probably got the freshest assets in the South African market from a mobile perspective. And it really will require much lower replacement capex into the future, given the newness of the plant and the facilities and the technologies that we have built up. If we look at the brand investment, as I've said, the move in the FMCG space has moved more and more and more to regional-based marketing, and from my perspective, much more operational marketing. It's really a fight out there on a street-by-street, block-by-block, community-by-community basis, And a significant amount of our investment in brand spend has gone into developing that capability and continuously improving over time our effectiveness of the spend that we have. It's not just about the size of the spend, but really about the impact that you make with that and how much you connect with your end consumer in their environment. And then the last area of our people investment, we've invested significant amount of money. Chart was quite instrumental in driving a lot of this initially. We did talent assessments on every single person in a leadership position, and I'm talking all the way down to supervisory level in our organization. We developed leadership development plans. We've introduced agile technology or methodology to run projects, and all the way from IT to bringing new product development to market. We've got a widely implemented Lean Six Sigma system within our organization as a basis for driving our continuous improvement. And so we're really sitting with a talent base within Premier that is highly capable and can deal with many challenges in the market. And I think that our ability last year under the COVID environment to never had to shut down one plant for even a day under the whole COVID world that we had to operate in as essential services provider really was testament to the extent to which the leadership at site level and in deep down in the operations was able to deal and cope and manage and lead their teams through the challenges that was presented by COVID. I think that also just to state that our asset base is established. It's a significant and massive scale asset base that we have in place that would in a new world probably be almost completely economically unviable to establish from scratch or from a greenfield perspective today. That does afford us quite a substantial competitive advantage as well as barriers to entry for new participants to become a scale player in the market. If we then move a little bit onto the acquisition side of what we've managed to do over the last 10 years, I think the first point I want to make is that the acquisition targets and the businesses we've managed to buy here is a fragment of the number of opportunities that we looked at. We've been actively involved in the acquisition space for the whole time period, and especially at times we didn't find acquisition opportunities where either the growth, the fit, or the pricing expectations of the sellers met our requirements. So I believe we've got a very strong track record of having made good decisions on what to buy. We've got an extensive matrix of criteria that we run every opportunity through that looks at size, growth, fit from a strategic perspective, the extent to which it adds efficiencies, and then very importantly, whether it drives a continued improvement in our return on invested capital or ROIC. If I can just perhaps state there that of the 18% EBITDA growth that I've mentioned previously in the 10 years from FY11 to 21, 12% of that was organic and the balance was acquisition driven. And I think that if I can focus a bit on the Mr. Sweet acquisition, which was our last acquisition, having bought that out of Lodestone, Premier has really found an opportunity there to bulk up our confectionery business. The Mr. Sweet acquisition has lifted us into a position where we're now the clear number two player in the confectionery space with two very strong factories, a lot of brands, a very wide product category, wide distribution, and quite significant scale from an efficiency and a cost perspective. And then, as we always do in everything that we do, the health and safety aspect of Mr. Sweet was also not necessarily there for when we acquired the business, and we have certainly managed to make a substantial change from that perspective already to bring it up to the Premier standard. So I think the most important part for me is that from an acquisition perspective, we really rely on our ability to completely integrate an acquisition and then introduce the Premier culture and the Premier way of doing things that really, in combination, adds the value for the shareholders. If we focus a little bit on just the defensive staple food categories in South Africa, and very specifically, as we've mentioned, bread being the largest dry grocery food product by value in South Africa, I think it's a very strong consumer proposition built around ready-to-eat nutritious meal in bread and really affording value to the consumer. I think from our perspective, we very much believe that with what we've managed to do in terms of our bread product and the innovation that we've managed to bring, not just by adding new variants, but also just innovating white and brown bread to be a better product, we continue to feel that there's a way for us to add significant value, differentiate the product, and continue to execute. And as I've mentioned, bread is a product that is manufactured from agricultural products. You start off with flour and any agricultural product, as well as it's viewed as a commodity, but it's certainly much more variable than that in terms of its qualities. And the ability for Premier to work with that product, execute every day, bake every day, load it up and get it quality on shelf, available on time every day, is certainly a massive, massive task and is difficult to continue to execute every day. As I said, the business has got high barriers to entry in terms of there's always new bakeries starting up. There's always new small-scale operators that operate in a localized environment, but they cannot meet the product quality, the product specifications of the large plant bakery with all the technologies that that affords. It's a complicated logistics model with a very high exposure to the informal market, where you're selling 10 loaves of bread at a time and your bread truck stopping between 80 and 100 times at different locations to drop off the bread in the informal trade. And then having to collect the cash, physically cash and coins, bring that back and process that. With Premier collecting somewhere between 200 and 300 million rand of cash and coins on a monthly basis, certainly is a massive scale operation. If we look at it from a margin perspective, it's a very high margin, large category food business. With a large element of cash sales really driving very strong cash flow and also making us significantly less dependent on large supermarket retailers from a competitive set perspective. Once you've established yourself in the informal trade, especially, it's very difficult to unseat a player, given that it is such a neighborhood-by-neighborhood, street-by-street based operation. And then from our perspective, we actually believe that the market is fairly reasonably balanced from a supply and demand perspective, and we don't believe that there are very large excess amounts of capacity, especially in terms of quality plants capable of baking the type of product that the consumer demands. It's certainly not in abundance in South Africa. So our bakeries, as I've alluded to, in the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, Durban and Eswatini are all integrated and dedicated with our wheat malls. As I've said, we've got a regional business being our BB brand in KZN, our Mr. Sweet, Mr. Bread brand in the Umtata region, our Star brand in the rest of the Eastern Cape, also the Mr. Bread and SUB brands operating in the Eswatini market gives us a capability as the number one and two player in many of these areas really to differentiate our product. Bread ultimately is a very regional basis, and so for us, it is important to look at it regionally. Premier is investing over 400 million rand in a new bakery in Pretoria, We've been working on that project for the best part of the last 4 years, and we are really at a point where it will be imminently commissioned, hopefully before the end of this calendar year, with commissioning rolling through and being completely in place with the start of our new financial year in on the 1st of April next year. We're very excited about that project. It's going to, for the first time, bring our capability in the inland region up to the same level that we've managed to have from a coastal perspective. And so the efficiencies that we expect out of that new facility will be a big contributor in driving our profitability going forward. We've continuously invested the capital, as I have spoken about. Building bakeries is a long-term business. It's not something that happens overnight, especially the scale that we operate. And that's why we've been busy for 10 years continuously making those improvements to get the highest quality. Premier's bakeries especially, we have what we call the Premier Way, which is really the way that we operate. And from a cultural perspective, the way we work in teams, the way we keep everybody aligned and focused on delivering the purpose and direction of what we are trying to do. We've got strong brand awareness with Blue Ribbon, and we have completely changed around our view in terms of the ESR from a Premier perspective. And our strategy is that we need to earn the right to operate in the communities that we do. And that has quite far-reaching implications all the way from marketing to CSI to the level of responsibility that one has around health and safety and food safety. And I will get to that in a bit more detail down the next slides. And then our logistic chain, you know, we've spent many years driving the efficiency there, getting the systems, the people, and the distribution in place to be as low a cost provider as we possibly can be. If we then just look at some of the biggest projects that have gotten us to the point where we are today, starting way back in 2012, with the Kroonstad mill that we upgraded, we used to have two maize mills in South Africa. And the Kroonstad mill's capacity was doubled to the 72 tons an hour, really giving an incredible scale and being located right in the middle of the biggest maize producing areas in the country. Our Durban bakery was in a really bad state back in 2012-2013, and we added a third line onto that bakery back in the day before we switched off the old first line to today have two fairly new lines in the Durban bakery. If we look at Cape Town, we were out of capacity in Cape Town and had to add a third plant, a brand new plant back in 2016 into the Cape Town bakery. Our Durban wheat mill was completely, one of the two mills in the building was completely finished. We switched it off in 2011, and by 2016-17, we had actually put a brand new Beulah mill into the Durban wheat mill, and especially to drive the quality that we were looking for from a flour perspective in our bakeries in the KZN market. We built a brand new bakery in East London to consolidate our Eastern Cape footprint. We shut down four subscale old small bakeries and built a brand new state-of-the-art bakery line on the same site as the wheat mill that we owned in Fort Jackson, just outside of East London. And that came on stream back in 2017-2018. And then we completely rebuilt the Pinetown bakery that was very old, over 25, 30 years old, and was really struggling. And today it is one of the top bakeries in our footprint. We have made also substantial upgrades to our bakery in Eswatini. We've got a new oven in there, new cooler, and a lot of other new components. And so as we wanted to make sure that we don't neglect any of our other smaller markets that we also operate in. I think the consistency of the spend over the period is quite evident, and that is really where we've managed to continue to drive the improvements from a profitability perspective. And after we complete the Inland Bakery project, which we will be busy with over and above Pretoria, we also need to do some work on our Aeroton plant. But within the next 18 to 24 months, our footprint would be completely renewed, and 11 of our 12 bakeries would be state-of-the-art and very recently rebuilt. If we look at our management team, we believe we're a highly experienced management team. I think the number of years that the people have been with Premier understates the fact that these guys have been in the industry that we operate in their whole life, for their whole careers, and really are capable of continuing to drive our performance going forward. You will also note there that Frans Germeshuysen is retiring next year, May, and that we have Anastasia Sodelay has joined us in May, and she is busy getting herself ready to take over from Frans in May next year upon his retirement. I think that below the management team there, I just want to quickly touch on the Premier Way. It's been a significant part of our drive around our people agenda within Premier to drive continuous improvement, to execute, to drive into an enduring employee value proposition and genuinely caring for people, and really creating an agile culture that delivers within the market. Premier's strategy is that our purpose really that drives our strategy is that our products and our people make a difference in the everyday lives of our consumers. And I think never before was that more evident than within the recent political unrest within the KZN market and somewhat in Gauteng, where it suddenly became clear how quickly the communities rely on the products that Premier produces in order to feed themselves and their families. Our purpose is driven through four pillars. The first and foremost one is unlocking future growth, and that really drives our acquisition and our investment strategy. And by investment, I also mean marketing investment, people investment, and capital investment. And it really sets out the criteria that we use quite extensively to make sure that where we invest, we do get the return on our investment. As I've said, we also earn the right to operate in our communities, driving our environmental, social, and regulatory part of our business, and I'll get into more of that on the next slide. Growing together to be the best is our people agenda, really driven around the Premier Way and our leadership drive within the organization. And then ultimately, there's an enormous amount of things just needs to be executed to perfection every single day, and that comes under our being brilliant at the basics. If you look within a Premier environment, one of our biggest overall philosophies is that you're either good at everything, or you're good at nothing. And you cannot have certain areas of your business where suddenly you neglect, and then you expect other parts of your business to be high-performing and be best-in-class within the market. And so when we start to look at our health and safety of our employees, it's a starting point of really driving an environment for our employees within which they can give their best and excel our business, and we have to provide a safe environment for them. So that is paramount in our organization, and is a zero compromise environment within Premier, and we really pride ourselves of the levels of health and safety that we have maintained throughout the organization with various certifications from FSSC 22000 to ISO 9001, the COVID protocols that we have got in place, our star ratings, which is an internal scoring system that we use in order to keep our operations feet to the fire, and then also the quality scores that we get from RSA, which is our lead insurer in the UK, that audits all our sites on an annual basis for risk assessment and the extent to which we manage to make improvements based on what the criteria and the areas that we've identified with them that we need to work on. From a social upliftment perspective, our products across the board lend themselves to make quite a big impact in the communities, from the bread to maize to wheat to our Lelets products. We really can make a big difference in the market. And our philosophy is that we need to be so involved in the communities with our products, with our initiatives, that it forms an integral part of our business. Doing donations or social investment is not an afterthought at Premier. It forms a core part of our strategy and of our daily basis of operating our business. And then Premier will never have no impact on the environment. We have to bake bread. We have to distribute product. But we are aware of what that use of fossil fuels are, and the opportunities that new technologies afford us in order to continually limit the impact that we have on the environment. We're also quite cognizant of the fact that our packaging materials do have a big impact on the environment, and we are actively engaged in making sure that we run as many improvements in the packaging from an environmental perspective, as well as continuing to drive the recycling, especially of the plastic bags that we use for the bread packaging. We also have a lot of initiatives underway to reduce our water consumption, and also especially from a electricity perspective, as well as reducing the use of paraffin and diesel, and trying to look at initiatives to move more and more towards the use of natural gas, which at this point in time really is our best option to reduce our use of fossil fuels. I'm now going to switch a little bit more to the financial performance of the business of the last 10 years or so. I think the first point that I want to make is that it's quite obvious that we've had sort of three different periods in terms of financial performance. We started off in 2011, and whatever improvements we made immediately started to flow through to the bottom line. There was a lot of low-hanging fruit in the business, and our improvement in terms of our profitability and the CAGR of our EBITDA certainly shows that. It's also quite obvious that we started off with a 4.5% EBITDA margin in 2011, and by 2016 we had managed to more than double that into double digits, which was a big driver for us to get our margins up and more sustainable from a capital perspective. And then driving return on invested capital. Then from 2017 to 2019, things got hard. Economy in South Africa was under strain. Rand volatility. We saw some huge drought period with the worst drought in 100 years, followed the next year by the biggest maize harvest in the history of the country, creating significant volatility from a raw material and grain perspective. I think that the takeaway for me here is that with a rigorous, well-tested hedging strategy, we managed to protect our business, and we never really took any big losses or any big declines as a result of that volatility. And I think that we will continue to be very prudent in terms of our hedging strategy to make sure that it's focused on really putting us in a position to be millers and bakers and not financial speculators. In Mozambique, the financial or economic collapse that happened after significant amounts of government debt that was not known to the public was found, really put a big impact on that economy. The metical went from 33 metical to the dollar to 80 metical to the dollar overnight, losing more than 75% of its value. And the gyrations that created, especially around availability of currency, and then the price of importing product, as well as the inflationary impact on working capital, was quite significant. And we saw the worst of that in 2019, when our Mozambican business only managed to break even at the EBITDA line. Subsequently to that, that business has really recovered well, and I'll cover a little bit more of that on a following slide. We also in 2019 took quite a substantial strike at our Cape Town facilities. There were some deep underlying lingering labor issues that was left over from a previously fairly violent strike in 2007-2008 that was never really fully resolved. Over the years, since 2011, we had introduced multiple programs, cultural initiatives, team building, et cetera, but we never really managed to fully put out the lingering underlying issues from the earlier strike. And so we took a strike eventually in 2019. I think that was a very costly exercise for Premier, but also a very costly exercise for the employees involved. And I think that we managed to deal with a significant amount of the leftover issues from back in the day, and that we have seen a much improved labor environment, especially in our Cape Town bakery, in the wake of that. The Cape Town bakery has also managed to really claw back a lot of the profitability that it lost as a result of that strike, and is really in a significantly improved position today. Premier's also, during this difficult time period, invested quite heavily in our continuous improvement, our Lean Six Sigma programs. We continue to invest during that period in our capital expenditure and our plant and equipment, as we have shown on a previous slide. And I think that when the market suddenly in 2020 and with during the COVID times, where Premier's business started to benefit from the increased spend through the grocery channels rather than restaurants, hotels, and food services, fast foods, all having been closed last year, really put us in a position where suddenly when that volume demand came through, we managed to turn around and really get some improvement in profitability as a result of that. And then in the last 2 years, as I've said, after the COVID world, we continue to actively manage our costs vigorously. Bad decisions gets made in good times, and we tell that to ourselves every single day. And we've continued to see volume and market share growth across our portfolio. Our Cape Town bakery has come back with profitability, and I think that our current trading really continues to give us confidence for the next couple of years. If we look at it from a cash generation perspective, we have significantly improved our cash flow as our profitability has increased. We've returned the 1.7 billion rand to our shareholders over and above all the investments that we've made. You can see that our expansionary capex really was quite a significant portion of our capex spend, with our normal maintenance capex being a much smaller portion of the spend. In 2021, the cash generation is somewhat overstated by a release in working capital that is not necessarily sustainable on an annual basis. And so we believe that a more normalized level of free cash flow generation after expansionary capex will be around the 50% mark. If we turn to the last two slides in the presentation, we're just focusing a little bit on the divisional performance. The first division is the Millbake business, which contributes 84% of Premier's revenue, so it really is the big profitability driver. Our revenue growth has been balanced between volume and price growth. In our business, given that we are tied to commodity prices, the ability to push through price increases is very important to offset inflationary pressures. In the last year, we've seen a significant run-up in fuel prices, especially fossil fuels, which directly impacts us, as I've said, with the paraffin and natural gas usage in our ovens, as well as the diesel in our distribution fleet. And we need an environment, and we have an environment in which we have managed to always pass through those increases to our consumers. Globally, we've seen a big run-up in the cost of most commodities, and wheat and maize certainly hasn't been spared. And so we are continuing to make sure that we manage our margins appropriately and push through those increases in raw materials to the consumers. The significant investment in CapEx have really given us the quality that has been the cornerstone of driving our volume growth. Is really all about quality, especially on the bread side. But the efficiencies that we have also gained from the continuously improving scale, as well as the new technologies just running much more efficiently and giving us much better throughputs on our plants, have continued to also drive. And especially in the Q1 FY22, we've now managed to get this business up to a 15% EBITDA margin, which is very satisfying. If we look at the grocery division, starting off with SIM, we've made a lot of investment in SIM in the facilities. When we bought the business back in the day, we knew that it was not up to premier standard. We've managed to do that. We have invested in both the physical property side of the business, as well as all the various plants, from the rebuilding the maize plant to upgrading equipment in the wheat plants to adding to the capacity in the animal feed side of the business. We have just about to commission the fourth biscuit line after we put in the third biscuit line a few years ago. When we bought the business, there was two biscuit lines, so we've effectively doubled the capacity of that facility. We've got three pasta lines in SIM, which we've completely rebuilt now and refurbished, and we expect to start to push through some nice volume and uplift in profitability for us. And so with the macro environment within Mozambique continuing to be difficult, especially after the unrest in the north put a halt on the further development of some of the gas fields. But ultimately, our business is based, as I've mentioned, in the south, in Matola, in in Maputo, up to Inhambane, which is really our main trading areas. And we have managed to continue to operate unscathed in those environments and continue to manage the business well. On the home and personal care business, we bought the Lelets business back in 2014. The South African part of the Lelets business has really benefited from the premier platform and infrastructure. We have managed to grow the profitability of that business. We've invested in a plant in Durban to make all the tampons for South Africa. And we've just recently commissioned a pads line to make all the, some of the pads that we used to import from the east in South Africa. And and that will all add quite well to our profitability, and it's not really fully in our numbers yet. On the UK side, it's been a hard business. When we bought the business, the pound was trading at almost $1.60. By the time Brexit hit, everybody knows that the pound took quite a big devaluation, and with all the product being imported, most of it dollar-denominated, US dollar-denominated, we did see some margin declines within that market. When we bought the business, we employed 45 people in the UK office. Today, we've got 16. So we've managed to pare down and improve our overhead cost structure substantially. And I believe that we're very well positioned to continue to drive the profitability of that business, especially with the base that we've created. The business is also, with the South African business, managed to be quite active in the new product development space. We've gone into organic products. We've developed maternity products, and we've developed products specifically focused on the teenage market. and all areas that we are very strong in from a market positioning perspective and will continue to give us good upside going forward. We've also recently managed to crack a listing for Amazon to start to enter the US market, and think it's an important opportunity for us going forward. From a sugar-based confectionery perspective, I've mentioned the acquisition of Mr. Sweet that have really step-changed our positioning in this category. The whole acquisition case was built around efficiencies and not relying on significant revenue growth to drive our returns. We're well underway in extracting all of those efficiencies. We've fully integrated the business. They're running on our ERP systems. They will, on the 1st of October, be running on our merchandising structures. They are, and from a manufacturing perspective, we are close to finalizing plans on the manufacturing footprint to fully integrate the two manufacturing sites and drive further efficiencies there. We're also distributing all the product on Premier's distribution infrastructure through our central DC in Lord's View. And so we've managed to drive a lot of costs out of the business from the distribution side as well. From a nutritional beverages perspective, it's a relatively small business that we acquired in Eswatini 2-3 years ago. The main driver behind the acquisition of this beverage is that it is a maize-based product. And so for us, there was a big opportunity strategically to expand our maize basket and drive our Iwiza and especially our Nyala brands as well deeper into the market. Ultimately, to the extent that we manage to further drive those brands, we can also sell more Super Maize Meal, which is the real large-scale product that is the main profit driver in the maize business. But it's also afforded us an opportunity to be more active in the private label space. And today we make private labels for ShopRite Checkers Group. We make private labels for Spar and for many other major retailers, and gives us an opportunity to have a very different relationship with some of the large retail customers of ours in the market. I think that from a margin perspective, the biggest driver for the decline in margin recently has been our Lelit's South Africa business, where we took a strategic decision last year in September to be more price competitive on a number of products in our product lineup. Under the current market conditions, the pricing pressure within the market was such, and we have quite good margins in that business, and so we saw an opportunity to really reset the profitability of that business in the short term, but also to make hard choices and then drive significant upside going forward. So that strategy has started to pay off. Our volume growth is looking strong in that business, and we'll reap the benefits in the coming years going forward. So that's the story from a Premier side. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kobus. I'm sure the shareholders are happy to hear from someone who actually knows what they're talking about. So I've got a couple of questions that have been sent through. So why don't we try? We'll have a bit of Q&A on those, and then I'll turn it over to the lines for anyone to ask any further questions. The first one is, EBITDA growth and cash conversion in Premier is highly commendable in what has been a tough consumer environment. Considering the substantial amount of capital you've plowed into the business, can you give us an idea of the ROICs in the business today, especially in the bread category where your competitors have committed significant capital?
We've managed to make quite big improvements in our ROIC. From a target perspective, Premier is targeting a sort of 15% plus ROIC range for our business. We are a business where you can also overcook your ROIC and start to make overprice your products in the market and then create long-term volume challenges for yourself. But in recent time periods, we've gone from the single digits all the way to now approaching our target level. And so From my perspective, I feel quite confident that we will deliver the ROIC targets that the market will seek from an investment perspective. I also believe that that the size of the platform is such that in order for us to continue to move our ROIC up, one actually needs to continue to invest in projects that are well north of your ROIC and that will continue to drag it up. And certainly from our perspective, we will not be investing in any projects where we don't feel that the project's ROIC will further pull up the ROIC of the overall business going forward. We're also very cognizant when we make acquisitions that the acquisitions needs to be additive or improving our ROIC over time. And so that is a large part of the criteria that we apply, and we will not make decisions that have a detrimental impact on that.
Now, I think the point is, Kuvis, as well, that the ROIC number that you referred to is actually after platform costs, right? So
Sure. The
individual to the question on bread, you know, it's significantly higher than that within the various categories themselves.
Right? Yes, agreed.
Okay, the next question. Weighing the logistical challenges and the better pricing that you get in the informal bread market, how has your market share in this channel evolved over the last 10 years? And do you expect this to, do you expect to further increase your share in this channel?
Look, the informal market is a difficult difficult space to gauge from a market share perspective, just because there is absolutely no data available on that informal market per se, and it really varies on a region by region perspective. All the major players all focus quite heavily on making sure that one drive sales in that market space. For us, it will continue to be a focus as it's always been. And I think that it really will revolve around our ability to continue to give a better quality product to the consumer that they demand. So I think there is opportunity for that, but it's highly competitive between the various bakeries and everybody competes vigorously for that space.
One further question. So you've invested significantly in the platform, which has delivered a lot of the growth. What other potential products and categories would you look to add to the platform?
I think from an organic perspective, we have a lot more investment opportunity within the group. There's a measured way in which we go about that. We have stated to the market that we are spending somewhere in the 400 to 440 million rand level, of which the significant portion of that is growth capex that drives an improvement in our ROIC. We see that those type of opportunities continuing for the outlook for the next 5 years with more projects that we can bring on stream. And we have a whole pipeline of investments that we will be targeting as part of our five-year strategy that is in place. So for me, at this point in time, it's really ultimately about prioritizing between the opportunities and making sure that that we invest in the right things at the right time frame and in the right sequence as well to drive maximum gain. So for me, I certainly am not concerned about running out of opportunities to really drive the continued growth within our business.
Okay. Next question is around the inland bakery. Please, can you indicate the benefits from the inland Pretoria bakery capex of more than 400 million? What kind of EBITDA or margin uplift do you expect?
Look, I think that if one looks at the bakery, we approved the whole capex project based on efficiencies. So where do the efficiencies come from? The first thing is that at the moment, our current footprint is smaller subscale bakeries that are all in excess of 25 years old and that require significant amounts of maintenance spend to keep going. The electricity usage is much higher than what the new plants afford. But also, we don't have a single robot in any bakery in the inland region where we have quite a substantial robots in all our coastal areas. So from a production efficiency perspective, there's a significant scale improvement from that. We see improvements in terms of distribution that we can do once we have that type of facility in place. So we see some big cost savings on that side. And then ultimately, the upside really lies in the fact that we are going to be capable of baking a quality product that we have not managed to put on the shelf up to now. If you look at the quality that we managed to put out in the KZN market and in the coastal regions, the inland region hasn't managed to match that. If you look at it from a margin perspective, we are probably running at half the EBITDA margin in the inland region than we are running at in the coastal areas. And our strategy ultimately with the efficiencies that we're driving is to get the inland region more on par with our operating margins in the coastal regions.
Follow-on question, how much EBITDA will Mr. Sweet add and from when?
Our Mr. Sweet EBITDA started adding on the 1st of June, so this year we'll have a 10-month contribution, and we will be looking to unlock a lot of the synergies in this period to really set it up. So I think that from our perspective, we would be looking for that business to add in this current financial year around about 80 million rand worth of EBITDA, and that climbing up to the 140 levels over the coming years.
One final question: your growth, particularly of late, has been significantly above the peer group. What's driven this, and is it sustainable?
I think that Premier's growth has been driven by many elements. As I've said, it starts off with having a quality product on the shelf. We've become the market leader in white bread, and I think part of what has driven our success in the white bread space is the quality of the product that we've put on shelf. I think secondly, we have created a culture and a people capability within our organization that understands how to run a bakery efficiently, how to run it well, and how to operate on a daily basis. We have relentless focus on where we sell what bread and driving areas for growth. And I think that it really comes down to our ability to continue to execute in a very difficult business. And run our plants at maximum efficiency and have a quality product on shelf every day, everywhere in the country for every consumer. I think that's what's driven our growth. I certainly feel that that we have a long way to go until we've got our fair share in the market.
Chris, I think there's one the question. Otherwise, we can. Did you just pass your hand?
Yeah.
Okay, the one further question. You've highlighted bread utilization at 90%. What is stopping Premier from further footprint or even regional expansion?
Look, I think that from our perspective, we're now focused on getting our inland facilities up to speed and driving the efficiencies on that project. That is the focus for now. We have over and above Pretoria, as I said, we also have Aeroton that is also in line to the moment Pretoria comes up and running. Aeroton will be shut down and will be rebuilt. The opportunity for us around shutting down four subscale, small, old, antiquated bakeries and having two new state-of-the-art facilities, one completely integrated with the wheat mill in Pretoria, where we will bring wheat onto the site, and the combined baking capability of the two plants that we're putting in there will be 17,000 loaves an hour. So wheat will come in and bread will go out. and then combine that with Aeroton once it's rebuilt, and then only having Potchefstroom as well as our third bakery will really step change us. That's where we're focusing. That will drive our performance. And to the extent that the market continues to or gives us some form of volume growth, that will be extra kicker on top. But we first and foremost focusing on getting that the efficiencies in the inland region up to speed.
Thanks. How much of your wheat milling capacity is used internally for baking? How does it compare to the competitors, considering most have integrated bakers? Most of
Look, I can't comment on competitors. I really don't have that type of statistics on them. But from our perspective, approximately 60% of our flour that we produce are consumed by our own bakeries.
Okay. Can you comment on the overall health of the bread market? Volume growth seen over the last few years and outlook? Competitors seem to be indicating some sort of slowdown, although Premier seems to be doing very well relative.
I think that the bread market as a category, the first thing one has to understand is that there's an incredible amount of people for which bread remains a luxury. They continue to feed themselves with maize meal and other even cheaper staple foods. And so the moment they have disposable income that puts them in a position where they can buy more bread, they do so. And so in an environment where the economy starts to give a little bit of a better lift to disposable income, we've always seen a disproportionate lift in the growth of the bread space. And so I think the difficult conditions, the after effects of COVID at this point in time might be creating a short term more sideways movement, not really growth or negative or positive growth. But going forward, you know, as we see disposable income being lifting, we certainly continue to believe that the bread market will afford quite good growth going forward, just because of the profile of the consumer base in South Africa and the aspirational nature of the product.
Okay. Next question. You manufacture biscuits in Mozambique, so very well versed and successful in the requirements of being in this category. What are your thoughts on using SA milling capacity and entering a new category of biscuits in South Africa?
Maputo is exactly 450 kilometers from Johannesburg. It's closer than Durban. So we sit with a wheat mill right on the harbor and with the biscuit plants on the same site where once the flour is produced, it's blown across into the biscuit plant. So for us, the footprint that we've managed to establish there, the know-how, the capability we've got there really makes it a no-brainer for us to continue to invest there. We have space for a fifth line there if we were to do so in the future. And so from my perspective, I see that as our center of excellence for biscuit baking, and we will certainly look to export into the whole SADC region from that facility and drive the volume in that way. So I think that for us, the best is to continue to invest in that facility and see to what extent we can compete into the South African and other surrounding markets from there.
At the lower end, right?
Absolutely, at the lower end.
Okay, next question. I'd like to interrogate your statement about bread, presumably, not being a commoditized business. Okay. What sustainable margin is there for this business going forward? Your major competitor has stated that high single-digit margins seem to be the norm. With the high competition in this space, it seems the only way to grow profits is either to take a larger portion of the total market, which is not growing that much, which seems to be in your favor, and being the lowest cost provider, which is also in your favor.
Yes, we're certainly going for lowest cost provider at this point in time. And that's why I said we've got four integrated malls and bakeries at this point in time. When Pretoria starts up, it will be our fifth one. And that is a footprint that is very difficult for any of our competitors to replicate. And that also gives us efficiency and scale and drives down our costs quite substantially. So for me, it's all about being the lowest cost provider in the country, and then coupling that with the lowest cost of distribution, because we now have large scale plant bakeries that have to be that service quite a large geographical area. we also have to be extremely efficient in the way that we distribute the product. And that's certainly where our focus is. And from my perspective, I believe that that will put us in a position where we can continue to sustain our current margins at least.
Yeah, look, I think the commoditization, you can talk about the bread production, but it's actually as much about the logistics and getting it to market, and particularly in the informal space, that's not commoditized.
Yes. Right?
And very, very difficult, high barriers to entry. So, you know, I think that the baking itself on scale is difficult enough, but actually it's commoditization even less around getting it to.
I also think that if you spend a few minutes at a bread shelf in a store, you will be surprised how many people walk in and take the brand off the shelf without looking at the price. And so within the bread space, there certainly is a pricing differential that one player can sustain over another one, given the quality of their product and the extent to which the consumer has elected to use that brand. So there is definitely some differentiated pricing that is possible, and the bread market has shown that over and over.
That's the only questions I have. Chris, can we turn it over to the lines in case there are any questions from the lines?
Of course, sir. Just a reminder to everybody on the call, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. So we don't have any questions in the queue at the moment.
Okay, one sort of last question has come in. I think we've sort of answered this, but acquisition targets, what sort of businesses would you look at considering? Premier has mentioned some opportunities that are still available, bolt-ons preferred, or any new category expansions planned.
I think that from our perspective, we need to recognize what we're good at. And so we have an ambient distribution infrastructure, and so we're not really interested in anything at this point in time that cannot be distributed on an ambient distribution platform. It's also, from our perspective, from there onwards can be any FMCG category that can be fitted onto our distribution platform, can go into our merchandising structures, and that we are capable of building up the know-how or have the know-how when it comes with the acquisition. I think that we're also not interested in getting into categories that are going to pull us down from ROIC perspective. I think from a geographical perspective, we're certainly not necessarily looking to expand our geographical footprint at this point in time. So once a category ticks most of those criteria, we then start to look at whether we think there's growth, what's the size of the efficiencies that we can take out, and then what is the a return on invested capital given the price that we need to pay to acquire it. And I think that categories are coming up all the time that meet that criteria. We continue to look at them and evaluate them on that basis, and we'll continue to make those investments as we can.
Thanks, Kobus. Unless there are any other questions on the line, I think we've reached the end of our Q&A. So I'll pause for 2 seconds just to see if there are any other questions. Okay. Look, thanks very much again. I know everyone's busy, and particularly the day before a public holiday. We really do appreciate the time. As I said, hopefully it's given you some insights, you know, much more direct insights into the Premier business. You know, from a Brait perspective, you know, we're very proud of the performance that the management team has driven here. I mean, it's easy to do it from our Lova offices, much more difficult to do it from the coalface. So, you know, credit to Kobus and the team for having driven that. And together with this, and, you know, I think there are some positive signs coming through in the rest of the portfolio companies. You know, hopefully there's some better times, you know, ahead more generally. But thank you again very much for taking the time. And as I've always said, Ronan and I are always available, as is Mark, if there are any other follow-up questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes this event, and you may now disconnect.